It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
What up, Cavs Nation? I'm your host, Ethan Sands, and I'm back with another episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. We have another episode of Hey Chris today, and joining me, as always, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris Fedor. What up, Chris?
Ethan, what's going on, man? How are you?
Man, we're pushing through. And today, Chris, we actually got some more fun things on top of the Hey Chris episode. We ran a poll today with our subtext subscribers to give them an opportunity to give us their opinions on what could go on with the Cavs during this playoff run. We had them vote to say whether they think the Cavs can get out of the first round, whether they're not going to win any playoff series, Eastern Conference semis, the finals, and the NBA finals, Chris. So I got some numbers to pull up, Chris.
Okay.
And here's how the votes stacked up, okay? 69% said they'd at least win the first round, that the Cavs would at least make it past the first round. 16% said they'd win at least the Eastern Conference semifinals. And then 15% said that the Cavs would not make it out of the first round. And then 0% said that NBA finals or the Eastern Conference finals were an option for the Cavs to win. So there's a lot of things that are interesting about this because I didn't think that there would be more people saying that the Cavs would make it past the Eastern Conference semifinals than not say that they were going to make it to the finals, because we both know that to get to the finals, because of where the Cavs are in the bracket, the Cavs will more than likely have to face off against Boston or Philadelphia and Miami after getting past the Orlando Magic, if that's how that goes down, to get to the Eastern Conference Finals. So thinking that they would both get through those two matchups and then they wouldn't beat whoever they meet in the finals is a little bit perplexing to me. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think there's some merits to this idea of if the Cavs win a first-round playoff series against Orlando, that gives them more confidence. Donovan Mitchell is further removed from the knee issue that he continues to battle. Dean Wade is further removed from his knee issue. Sam Merrill further removed from his neck issue. And who knows what's going to happen in the first round against Orlando. Maybe the Cavs will be beat up physically coming out of that series. But I think this is the kind of group that is built to get better as the postseason progresses if they get an opportunity to do that. Now, everybody understands just how talented Boston is. They are the best team in the Eastern Conference by a lot. They are arguably the best team in the NBA, depending on how you feel about Boston versus Denver versus Phoenix versus some of the other teams in the Western Conference. But I just think the Cavs, if they win a playoff series, that gives them a jolt, an organizational jolt. That gives them belief. That gives them an understanding of how to win when it comes to playoff basketball. And I think that will allow them to play well against Boston. And look, like, Boston's not the dynastic Golden State Warriors here. They take weird shots at weird times. They don't execute great down the stretch in pressure situations. They don't always value possessions. So it's not like this is an infallible opponent that the Cavs would be facing. It would obviously be a tough road. And I totally understand that. And I would not pick the Cavs to win a second round playoff series against the Celtics. But I just think this group, if they find a way to win against Orlando in the first round, I think this group would be emboldened by that. And I think they would give Boston a heck of a series if Donovan Mitchell is closer to the guy from the first half as opposed to the guy that we saw in the second half. And I think there are reasons to believe that he will be closer to the guy from the first half.
Yeah, and I definitely think that a platform could be formed if they're able to win in the first round. Like you said, Chris, the opportunity to find a team that says, we actually made it past the first round, unlike last season. The confidence that that builds and just the experience, which we found to be one of the bigger sources of just strength for this team this season going up against Orlando. And I know we talked about Boston, but we also have to throw in the possibility that the 76ers or the Heat take down Boston in the first round for them. And, I mean, Joel Embiid is back with the 76ers. Miami's Miami in the postseason. I think those are still two difficult roads to go through. And, I mean, want to step back just a second to Boston. We all know how good Boston is at home this season. Obviously, I don't think you were saying it would be an easy road by any means, but I definitely think that there is possibility that, like you said, the confidence boost that they get. I just think that the best possible second round matchup for them, I don't know. I want to say Miami, but I know that is on paper. That's not like what they have going on mentally, physically, and things of that nature. That's like who they could match up with 1 through 5 on the roster and things of that nature. But because you think about Joel Embiid and Buddy Hield being annoying on the 3-point line, and Tyrese Maxey, and then obviously the Boston Celtics have 1 through 5 guys that can create and do things. And then you look at the Miami Heat and Tyler Hero is getting back from an injury and Jimmy Butler is Jimmy Buckets, but it's hard to do it all by yourself. And then Jared Allen and Evan Mobley have shown that they can have success against Bam Adebayo rather than just having one big that can handle Bam. I think it would be an interesting series against Miami, especially if we're thinking about a second round matchup after the propellant of the first round confidence. But like we said, everything is on paper, and we just have to see.
Here's a question that I have, Ethan. What kinds of teams stylistically do you feel like give the Cavs the most problems?
We've talked about this all year. The bigger teams, the burlier teams, the stronger teams, the teams that are willing to impose their will, not even physically but mentally as well. And I agree that Miami definitely falls into that category. I just think matchup-wise, it would be better for the Cavs going forward if they can show that mental toughness in the first round.
Right. So that team that you just described, just in terms of a skill set, on paper, that's not Boston. You know what I mean? Yeah, like Boston's a really good defensive team. Boston is an elite offensive team. But they're not burly like the Knicks, right? They don't have an imposing front court like the Knicks last year. They're not the best rebounding team in the NBA. In terms of defensive rebounding percentage, they are top 10, but they're not the same level as the Knicks, right? So I just think when you start talking about stylistically the kinds of teams that give the Cavs the most problems, Boston doesn't immediately come to mind. And that doesn't mean that they're not great. And it doesn't mean that they wouldn't win a second round series against the Cavs. It just means that's not the style team that comes to mind immediately. That's the style team that it feels like the Cavs have a fighting chance against when it comes to a matchup perspective. Not from a talent perspective necessarily, but from a matchup perspective. And we do understand that the playoffs are in large part about matchups. And certain teams you're going to match up better against than others.
100%.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, Chris, now that we got through that portion of the episode, I want to get into our rendition of Hey Chris for this week. We had a couple questions from subtexters, and I think there's some that are pretty good. So we're going to start with the first one from Derek from Indiana, who asks, it's been said that winning a playoff series would constitute a successful season for the Cavs as an organization. However, Donovan Mitchell has already experienced that level of success. How far would the Cavs have to go in the postseason for him to sign a contract extension this offseason? Or is the allure of New York too strong? I'm going to let you handle that one, Chris.
Ethan, I think the allure of New York is always going to be there for Donovan. Just like for LeBron, the allure of playing for a historic franchise like the Los Angeles Lakers was always going to be there. It was always going to be appealing to him. But like I said this at the time when it came to LeBron, and I'm going to say it when it comes to Donovan, there are many, many factors that go into whether he signs a contract extension with the Cavs and where he ultimately ends up in a couple of years. Not all of those factors are about market, about situation. Some of those have to be about basketball. Because Donovan wants to win. And we've talked about this a number of times. Donovan is at a point in his career where he considers himself one of the best players in the entire NBA. I had a conversation with Donovan a couple of nights ago for a big feature that I'm working on for Cleveland.com that is going to drop on Tuesday morning, where Donovan and I talked about the possibility of him one day becoming the face of the NBA. He understands that you do not become the face of the NBA without playoff success. So if there's a situation out there that is appealing to Donovan from a basketball perspective that gives him an opportunity to reach his ultimate goal of getting to the conference finals, getting to the NBA finals, and winning a championship, then Donovan's going to explore that, right? But I don't think Donovan is at a point in his career yet where it's, I gotta get to New York. I gotta get to New York. I gotta get to New York. That, to me, feels like a later down the road toward the end of his career sort of thing, unless he feels like one of the two New York teams is a viable path, or one of those two New York teams gives him a better basketball situation than what currently exists in Cleveland. And maybe that's the way that it goes, right? Maybe that's how Donovan views the Brooklyn Nets, or that's how he views the New York Knicks. But it's not going to be, whatever decision he makes in the future, it's not going to be primarily driven by New York, New York, New York, New York. I think it's going to be primarily driven by who gives me the best chance to compete for a championship. So that's first and foremost. The second thing that I would say is, yes, if the Cavs as an organization and a number of their players have talked about just taking the next step as an organization, because there are steps along the journey. They went from 44 wins and a play-in team to 51 wins and a playoff team. They got bounced in the first round. So the logical next step, the rational next step for this organization is win a playoff series. Do not allow yourself to flame out in the first round the way that you did against the Knicks. That is representative to me of progress. That is representative to me of a step forward. But I don't think Donovan will view it that way. If we're being honest about it, I do not believe that Donovan, who has a reputation as a guy who cannot get past the second round, and as he told me, it eats at him, I don't believe that he's going to see that as progress. I believe if they win a first-round playoff series and they lose in the second round, how they lose in the second round matters. How Darius Garland performs matters. How J.B. Bickerstaff does as a tactician, that matters too. And if all of those things make Donovan question the situation in Cleveland and the viability of Cleveland competing for a championship into the future, then I do think he'll be hesitant to sign a contract extension this offseason. And I would not blame him for that.
Yeah, and first and foremost, we know that Donovan does not have to sign an extension this offseason. He has an entire next season. The Cavs could potentially trade him at next year's trade deadline to get more for their buck, whatever. But
can I say one more thing really quick? Because I think this has to be said. Donovan's been bad in his last two playoffs. He has. He was terrible against Dallas. That was the low point in his career. That was the quickest that he has ever exited the playoffs in his career until last year against the Knicks when it went five games instead of six games like that Dallas series. So Donovan is coming into these playoffs and he has something to prove too. And he's got to pass the superstar litmus test, right? So it's not only on Darius Garland. It's not only on Evan Mobley and J.B. Bickerstaff and some of these other guys to show Donovan, hey, I'm ready for this. Right? Hey, we are going in the right direction. We do have something here that is sustainable, that's going to allow you to compete for championships. Donovan's got to do his part, and he's got to be better than he was last year against the Knicks, and he's got to be better than he was against Dallas 2 years ago, and he knows it.
Yeah, and sometimes you got to prove it to yourself before you can prove it to everybody else, Chris, and that's a big thing for Donovan, who has utmost confidence in himself but needs to see it come into fruition in this year's playoffs. And I want to go back to what you were saying about the potential for him to want to go to New York or whatever based on if they have a better outlook with when it comes to the postseason, and I think we can both be honest, it's not going to be Brooklyn anytime soon.
Right.
Because what are you going to get rid of Mikal and Cam Thomas to get them? And the two guys that are actually playing well for you? No. So I really do think that the Cavs have a great foundation and they have a lot of players that can build around Donovan Mitchell. And they just need that opportunity, which they're about to get on Saturday against the Orlando Magic in the first game of this first round series, and to show that they can step up and be the teammates that Donovan Mitchell needs to support him to be the player that he needs to be in the playoffs.
And here's the other thing about Brooklyn too, Ethan. That's the other New York team.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And that's going to be the other New York team for a while. And there is an argument.
Forever.
There is an argument that Donovan goes to any situation in the NBA and he finds a way to elevate that team because that's who he is. He makes everybody around him better. He empowers his teammates. He is an elevator of franchises. He has never missed the postseason in his career. He took the Cavs to new heights. He took the Jazz to new heights. So yeah, he could go to Brooklyn and there is a level of Donovan that would turn them into a respectable franchise and maybe a competitive franchise. But would that be a step forward compared to the Cleveland situation? Or would that just be a lateral move that also may possibly appeal to him because of the city and the market that he's in? You know what I mean? So, yeah, everybody's right. Donovan could go to Brooklyn and he could make them competitive and he could make them relevant. But does that allow him to compete with Boston? Does that allow him to compete with Milwaukee? Does that allow him to compete with Philadelphia? Who's it going to be? Donovan and Nick Claxton? Like Donovan and Ben Simmons, who plays like 20 games a year and has a bloated contract that prevents Brooklyn from making other moves around the margins to improve the roster? Because if we're talking about this offseason, whatever team is going to trade with the Cavs is going to have to give up something of value. It's not just going to be a whole bunch of picks. The Cavs aren't going to be satisfied with that. If you think about what the Cavs gave up to get Donovan, it was players and picks. So the Cavs would be in a situation where, theoretically, they'd still have Darius, they'd still have Evan, they'd still have Jared Allen, and they'd still feel like, hey, to some degree, we could still compete. This isn't a blow-it-up situation, so give us something back of value. The Cavs will start by asking for Mikal Bridges. Then they'll ask for Cameron Johnson. Then they'll ask for, like, these other intriguing pieces to go with draft picks as well. And then you say, okay, we'll take some of those pieces off of that Brooklyn team. And then what's Donovan and the Nets, what are they going to be left with? What, are they going to be the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference? They're going to be fighting to avoid the play-in tournament. Like, that's not that appealing of a situation. If we're being honest about it, the situations that would be most potentially appealing from a basketball standpoint, with Donovan going there and elevating those teams, Miami, it fits the market, it fits the culture that he's looking for, it fits the competitiveness that he's probably looking for from the roster. The Lakers? Duh. And then, you know, the Knicks, if they can find a way to make it all work financially, and if they feel like it's a good schematic fit. Those are the situations that come to mind immediately. You know, people have talked about San Antonio. That would be a lot of fun, him and Wemby together, but, like, how many years is that gonna take? So I just don't see all that many pathways for Donovan to get more out of the basketball situation than what is currently here in Cleveland. And that doesn't mean that this organization doesn't have its flaws. And that doesn't mean that the roster doesn't have its flaws. And it doesn't mean that there aren't questions about J.B. Bickerstaff and how he is as a tactician and an X's and O's guy. All of those things still exist and can still be true, while also saying that this is a pretty good basketball situation for Donovan.
I agree. I could not agree more. I think that's exactly what we were alluding to, that this is a good situation, a good team, and, like, Donovan on it only makes it better. But I think it's time for the next question, Chris, from Frank Incinci, who asks, why does Darius Garland look so lost in the offense the last few weeks? Is he just pressing, or are we running things differently? And what are the chances we find any offensive flow against the Magic? 25%? First and foremost, I think we have to talk about the situations that Darius has been put in, not only dealing with a return from a fractured jaw. Donovan has been in and out of the lineup a lot this season, and Darius feeds off of Donovan, as does everybody on the Cavs team. But also, when Donovan is off the court, more of the attention from anybody else goes to Darius Garland. So that means the offensive production, the defensive work that he has to do, facilitating, playmaking, getting his teammates involved, all of that eyes on Darius Garland. And the fact that the expectation is supposed to be the same is kind of crazy to me, because I don't think Darius is ready as of yet in his career to handle a team like that. Is not ready to be the franchise guy. And we've said that on multiple occasions on this podcast. But so when Donovan is out and Darius has to step up his play, eyes are on him, defenses are being able to blitz him and take the ball out of his hands, it's much harder for them to do that when they have to focus on both Donovan and Darius in multiple situations. But with Darius just being out there on his own, they're able to solo in on him and take the ball out of his hands or force him to create and other things like that. If we want to talk about late game situations when Donovan's on the court and him not being productive, sure. But then I would caution you to look back at the most recent thing that happened where he hit a dagger three and got the confidence that we all think he needed going into the postseason. So not taking recency bias, but examining what the facts are and thinking, like, what he can grow from the experience that he got in all of the opportunities this season, success and failures, and how he's going to be able to take those into the postseason.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that it's fair to point out is that Darius isn't Donovan, and we can't expect him to be Donovan. And when Donovan's not out there, the offense just isn't going to function the same. I'm sorry. Just like the offense in Philadelphia didn't function the same without Joel Embiid. And I think Darius is just, I think he's going to be an inconsistent producer of offense, because I think he's got flaws in his game, in his offensive game. And I think he's an easier guy for opponents to, I don't want to use this term, but I can't think of another one, bother? Pester? Than somebody like Donovan. You can be more physical with Darius. You can try and get the ball out of his hands, and he doesn't have the same off-ball capabilities. He doesn't finish as well at the rim, and I think defenses understand that. He is an adept at drawing fouls and getting to the free throw line and getting easy points. So he's still maturing as a basketball player, and he's still trying to figure out how to navigate situations when he is the focal point of the opposing defense. And that's not always the easiest responsibility. That is a superstar's burden to carry, and Darius is not a superstar. So I think there's just going to be relative inconsistency when it comes to his performance and how the Cavs offense looks when the driver, the primary driver of the offense, and Donovan, is not out there.
We talk about what Darius has been able to do on and off the court this year, when and without Donovan. I think he deserves credit for what he's been able to do, even in situations like that. But you obviously see when a defender guards him the entire length of the court, when he's getting trapped in the backcourt, his eyes, obviously we can't see them, but it feels like they light up. And it's like you understand that he has that attention on him and he's not as comfortable in those situations.
And here's the other thing. I don't think he's looked lost for a majority of the second half of this season. I think that's taking it a little bit too far. Have there been some performances where his turnover numbers have been too high, that he has a troubling nonchalance when it comes to taking care of the basketball and valuing possessions? Sure. But, I mean, he scored in single digits twice? Three times since the start of March. You know, he's had multiple double-digit assist games since the start of March. He's had a bunch of games where he has more assists than turnovers. He's got multiple 20-point games since the start of March. He's got a 30-point game since the start of March. So, I don't know. Like, it feels, in some ways, I understand the level of expectation placed on Darius. He's the highest paid player on the roster. He's the highest paid player in franchise history. But I feel like he is being evaluated as if he's the best player on the team. I feel like he's being evaluated and criticized as if he's Donovan Mitchell. And I just don't think, for me personally, I just don't think it's fair to have that sharp critical eye of Darius and try and expect him to be that level of player, because he's not that level of player. And I think he possibly, maybe, could grow into that down the road. But at this stage of his career, at this stage of his development, at this age, he's not that player.
All right, Chris, it's time for the next question from a new in San Francisco who asked, what were the best five player lineups for the regular season overall, and the best five lineups against the Magic? So, I did some digging, but I pulled up the best five lineups for both that he, she, or they asked for, and I looked it up based on points, because that was the easiest one to go off of.
Why didn't you look it up based on net rating?
That's also a good thing that I could have done. But I was on the NBA.com website, and I don't think they had net rating on where they I was looking at. Well, at least not where I was looking. But so here's what I have based on the points. This is against the Magic. Number one is Darius Garland, Isaac Okoro, Max Strus, Evan Mobley, and Jared Allen. Number two is Donovan Mitchell, Garland, Strus, Mobley, and Allen.
Which is a three good sign, by the way, for the Cavs.
Three is Mitchell, Okoro, Strus, Dean Wade, and Allen. Number four is Mitchell, Garland, Strus, George Niang, and Tristan Thompson. Number five is Mitchell, Garland, Strus, Wade, and Thompson. And that's just against the Magic. So we have to look back and remember who was available in some games. Obviously, they played four times and things like that. I think the third lineup had the most games played together. But the overall best lineups based on points is number one, the starting five. Surprise, surprise. Garland, Mitchell, Strus, Mobley, Allen. Number two, surprise again, the lineup when Garland and Mobley were out. Mitchell, Okoro, Strus, Wade, Allen. Three, Craig Porter Jr., Okoro, Strus, Wade, and Allen. Number 4, Garland, Strus, Wade, Mobley, and Allen. And number 5, Craig Porter Jr., Donovan Mitchell, Max Strus, Dean Wade, and Tristan Thompson.
So here's one of the things that I think is difficult when it comes to evaluating this is that there have been so many different lineups that the Cavs have been forced to use. There have been so many different variations that they've been forced to use. The lineup that they would want to be their most effective, that they would want to continue to lean on heavily, is their projected starting five of Donovan, Darius, Max, Jarrett, and Evan. But that group together, Ethan, played less than 400 total minutes. So it's not really the sample size that you would want when it comes to true evaluation. And the numbers are not friendly to that fivesome. They have a net rating of 1.4. And there are like so many different factors that go into success for lineups. And when the Cavs were at their best, part of the reason why they were at their best is Donovan was playing at an MVP level. Another reason why they were at their best and going on that run is because they were taking advantage of a weak schedule. It wasn't as grueling as March was. Donovan wasn't laboring at that point yet. So there are so many different factors into it. But I think the one thing that we can say is that given the way that this team is constructed and given the way that they want to play, in most cases, not every case, but in most cases, it feels like if they want to raise their offensive ceiling to a different level, the way to do that is split up Jared Allen and Evan Mobley. Because there are just spacing issues, there are shooting issues. It's easier at times for defenses to load up on Darius and Donovan because they don't have as many perimeter threats. So I think if you're looking for offensive-minded lineups that will give you a little bit more juice on that end, you talk about Dean Wade at the four. You talk about George Niang at the four, right? And the numbers seem to back that up as well. Again, you have to have the right perspective when it comes to analyzing these lineups and looking at these numbers. But against Orlando specifically, I think it's fair to point out that the combination of Jared Allen and Evan Mobley, with both those guys on the floor, the Cavs have been incredibly effective. Four-game sample size, right? We understand that. But the Cavs have been incredibly effective offensively, and they've been dominant defensively. And part of the reason for that is you need size against Orlando. You need to have switchability against Orlando. You've got to have defensive mind paint protectors against Orlando. And I think this is one of the series where the Cavs, Ethan, may be able to get away with the Evan Mobley-Jared Allen combination a little bit more than some other matchups would allow them to. And I do think that JB and this coaching staff will lean heavily on the combination of Evan and Jarrett. And that means that George is going to have to step up and provide quality minutes at the four. That means that Marcus Morris Sr. may have to step up and provide quality minutes at the four. That means Dean Wade is hopefully going to be available for the Cavs' purposes because he would be needed in a series against Orlando. He would be needed in a series against Miami, Philadelphia, Boston in the second round if the Cavs were able to get that far. And I talked to somebody close to Dean earlier today, and they said that there is hope that he will return to the practice floor this week, potentially, to try and test out that sprained knee, and that Dean is doing everything that he can possibly do to get ready in time for the playoffs. And I think the Cavs organization recognizes how much value there would be to having Dean in this particular series against Orlando. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how JB is going to handle the rotation. I think it's going to be fascinating to see how he's going to handle the combinations. Because in this series specifically against Orlando, different things are required of the Cavs than what would have been required against a team like Indiana, for instance.
Yeah, Chris, and I really do think it's going to be interesting because I think it's fair to point out the Cavs have not had this much time off in their schedule. I want to say since they went to Paris and came back.
It's probably right. There was that weird stretch where they had some time off in between New Orleans and Houston, and they actually mixed in a practice, and that's where Dean Wade got hurt.
Yep.
But, like, that was a weird break in the schedule that they tried to capitalize on. But other than that, you're right. It's been a long time because this schedule has been a meat grinder.
So the opportunity not only for Dean Wade to get some reps in potentially at practice this week, but also for other guys to heal up, and just for also J.U. Bickerstaff to finally, as he's been talking about in all of his pressers, get down to the X's and O's with his players, see what works, see what doesn't work. And that's one of the difficult parts of an 82-game season that is smashed together, especially for the Cavs, is there's no time to really work through stuff. You can obviously watch film and discuss things on the plane and bus rides and things of that nature, but getting on the court and working through those different actions and things of that nature is more difficult when you simply can't practice or you're just doing shoot-arounds and walkthroughs through games. Next question. Mitch in Las Vegas asks, there is much speculation on JB's future with the Cavs. Why do you think Becky Hammon isn't being considered for an NBA head coaching job? First and foremost, okay, this is a curveball, but we are going to go through it really quickly. I think that the biggest part of this is that Becky Hammon is successful right now. With the Aces, they've won back-to-back championships. They're incredible. Becky Hammon is a great basketball mind in her own right. And I think that she's proven that she doesn't need recognition from the NBA to get that success or anything like that. And I think the other thing is, this is probably one of the most star-studded WNBA draft classes in recent history. And there's so much that this era is going to bring. I mean, we're talking about this on the night of the WNBA draft with Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese. They are so star-studded and going to be a different era. Chris, I saw something on, I think, X today talking about that this draft class could potentially be like what the 03 NBA draft class did for the league. That's LeBron, Carmelo, D-Wade. Like, those kind of guys that pretty much changed the NBA and how things were looked at and things of that nature. And I don't think that's too far off. But I also want to talk about the importance of, like, women getting that type of recognition, but all the work that they've been doing as well. Like, you talk about Cheryl Swoops, you talk about Deanna Taurasi, like, that, those players coming before and setting the tone and doing all the things. It's like what Caitlin Clark said, like, they have kicked down the door so she could walk through. And I also think Becky Hammon has also done a big thing because now there are other women getting opportunities or getting looks for head coaching jobs in the NBA. Obviously, we know that Becky Hammon was an assistant of the Greg Popovich in San Antonio. And I think she was the first head coach of a summer league game, if I'm not mistaken, a couple years ago. And that was a big thing. And now the Sacramento G League head coach who won Coach of the Year this year, Lindsey Harding, was interviewed by the Charlotte Hornets, I think, as of late. So there's just so much going on, and I don't think there is a need, unless Becky Hammon wants there to be, to go to the NBA. Because there's so much going on in the WNBA. There's so much that they can accomplish. And I also think it'd be fun because you talk about the talent that's coming into the league. But looking at the coaching schemes that she has set, the welcome to the WNBA moments that are going to happen, and just going as the styles, like coaching versus talent. And I think that's something that's going to be explored this season specifically, and also as long as these new girls are in as well.
There are a couple other things here that I think we have to mention, Ethan. Number one, what are there, two head coaching openings in the NBA right now? Brooklyn and Charlotte? Is that right? So maybe this offseason, more are going to open up. Maybe other teams aren't going to be happy with their coach and they want to make a change. And with more opportunity, you have to find other worthy candidates. And then maybe those other teams are going to reach out and see if Becky Hammon is willing to interview with them. She interviewed with the Toronto Raptors. She interviewed with the Portland Trailblazers. She has gotten head coaching interviews in the past. So she is clearly on the NBA radar. And teams are clearly exploring the possibility of trying to see if that would be something that would work for them, their organization. The other thing is, she has spoken on the record multiple times about how much she loves the WNBA, how much she loves women's basketball, how much she loves the fact that it's not an 82-game grind. Coaching in the NBA is not for everybody. JB Bickerstaff has talked about this before. Other coaches around the league have talked about it before. If you are not in it the way that these players, these coaches, and reporters are on a day-to-day basis, I don't think you fully understand how difficult the NBA regular season is and the amount of sacrifice that is required to get through an NBA season and the amount of guilt that you feel just having this kind of job that takes so much of your time, that takes so much preparation. The WNBA plays a 40-game schedule. There aren't back-to-backs. It's basically in the summer, and that's it. The NBA season is 82 games, and it goes, in some cases, from September all the way to June. That is a large time commitment. And Becky Hammon is a mother of two, right? That has to factor into it as well. So part of what goes into these decisions that any coach is going to make is whether they can balance all of the life stuff with the grind of an 82-game season. And happiness is a big driving force for anybody in the career that they pick and the job that they take. And it definitely feels like she is happy with everything that the WNBA affords to her, including a little bit more schedule flexibility than what's required in the NBA.
Chris, I think that's well said. And I think there are so many things that go into that, because obviously, like, you get in the door, but it's not ultimately your decision. You can only do so much to get those opportunities. And I mean, like we said, Lindsey Harding's in contention for the Charlotte Hornets head coaching job. And we've talked about how Becky Hammon has had opportunities to be interviewed for other teams, but hasn't ended up getting those jobs. And now she's with Las Vegas and is thriving and has one of the best teams in the WNBA. Like, so yeah, it's a lot that goes into it, but also personal enjoyment. And like you said, Chris, like, we've seen how much this game needs somebody like Becky Hammon to be at the forefront as one of the pinnacle coaches in the league right now. So yeah, but Chris, I think that is all the questions that we have, unless you want to talk about anything else before we wrap up today's podcast.
No, I don't have any other questions.
All right, that'll wrap up today's episode of the Wine and Gold Talk podcast. But remember to subscribe to our Subtext channel. It's 14-day free trial, or you can sign up for the $3.99 service on Subtext. So to do so, you can go to cleveland.com/Cavs and click on the blue bar at the top of the page. If you don't like it, that's fine. All you have to do is text the word stop. It's easy. But we can tell you that the people who sign up stick around, because this is the best way to get insider coverage on the Cavs from me and Chris. This isn't just our podcast, it's your podcast. And the only way to have your voice heard is through Subtext. Y'all be safe. We out.